Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And as always, I have a question for you. Have you ever asked yourself, is this all there is? Have you ever felt like life is an exhausting treadmill from which you cannot get off, or one on which you fear getting on? In today's podcast or post, we explore the institutional authorities of our friends and vocations. I'm going to reveal why we can't just pick the right job and everything will just work out. Join me now as I explain why so many people are imprisoned by friends and vocation, and how we can subvert this authority with a new name and begin healing our lives. Hello, everybody, and thank you so much for coming back to yet another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. I am your host. My name is Kevin Winder, and I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach, among many other things that I do, just like you. I say that all the time because it's true. I'm so glad that you're here. Folks, man, also all the new people tuning in, reaching out, telling me your story, sharing with me your feedback, your backstory. Man, I love hearing about all this. Folks, the feedback from last week's post on the family has been really tremendous. I have heard several of you say that it was truly transformative, and I hope it is. It has opened up a dialogue for a number of you, and I want to extend that invitation to any of you listening, no matter when you hear this. You know, the half-life of the internet is such that you could tune into this podcast years from now. The way that I structure all of my content into buckets that you can access at your point of need on my website, kevinwinder.com, means that people are tuning into these podcasts in a self-serve function. It's a self-help kind of menu. And whenever or however you hear this, this is for you. This is a time for you to make a change, but you can always, whenever it is, reach out to me. Just write me support@kevinwinder.com. And I spell my name like the number 7, K-E-V-E-N, and I will engage with you. If you have not been to my website and subscribed to my weekly newsletter, it's called Winder's Windshield. I invite you to go to the website and do that, kevinwinder.com. Subscribe to Winder's Windshield, and then all you have to do at any time to engage with me is just hit reply, and I'm right there. I answer every single thing until I can't. So at some point, this is going to overwhelm me. But right now, I figure it out. I find a way. It all happens. And I want to invite you into a dialogue if you think that would help you. And so, folks, we are in part 5 of a series entitled Fix Your Faith. And we have been kind of deconstructing some of these things. I'm using a very unorthodox, out-of-the-box approach to helping you understand why your New Year's resolutions have failed, why you are not making the changes you want. Today, I'm going to expose all of that. We'll do a little bit of review, but today we are going to focus on our friends and our jobs. And so today is podcast number 478. It's part 5 of our Fix Your Faith series. I entitled it Friends and Vocations. So, like I've said, our lives do not really change by doing push-ups or going on a diet or getting a budget. Okay? Now listen, all of those things truly are each very important. But lasting transformation flows from the inside out. Okay? It is not an outside-in job. So when we go about our life and we say, I need to go on a diet, we're looking from the outside in. The reason diets fail is because we failed to change the inside first. The reason going to the gym is so crowded in January and so empty in February is because most people think they can just tweak a few things on the outside and then everything gets better. It's a foolish pursuit. If you don't fix the inside, the outside doesn't change. Why? Because everything in your life, the way you look, all this kind of stuff, most of everything, your amount of debt, the amount of suffering you have, most of this, not all, but most of this of your life, the outside measuring parts of your life are really just the outcropping of what's going on the inside. So transformation flows inside out. Now, this series invites us into the depth dimension, on that internal part where we can scour the depths of what the Bible calls our cardia, our inner self. It's a soul. You need to do soul work to really make a change. And if you miss this discovery, then your efforts at change will usually fail. Okay? This is 101. This isn't complex stuff here. But because most people skim over the depth of life, they struggle all the time. And that's what I'm here for. I'm here to help you. I'll show you the depth dimension. Anybody who interacts with me knows that I live in this place. I don't like small talk. I like to get to know a person on a deeper level. And we go there and it's fun and change happens. But give yourself some grace. You see, folks, we don't fail despite our best efforts. We fail because of them. We're also not victims here. We're not powerless. It's not like you failed because something bad happened to you, or you're in an underprivileged environment, or you're the wrong gender or race or whatever it is. Stop it. You're not a victim. These narratives are a form of self-hatred and self-harm, which don't come from our true identity. That's that word teleos, that authentic, that perfect part of us found in the love of God. And I keep saying that, and I know that's weird for some of you. You can't get there because religion jacked it all up for you. And I'm sorry about that. But I don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm not here to invite you into a religion, but I am unapologetically pointing you back to your maker. Right? When we forsake this true identity found in the love of God, we are refusing to be our true self. That is the essential message of Soren Kierkegaard in his book, A Sickness Unto Death. And so my premise in this series is that these exousion, and that's that Greek word for authority, and if you remember, we're going back to Jesus' temptation in the wilderness. Satan comes up and says, "Hey, Jesus, I will give you all of the kingdoms of the world because their exousion and doxa, their authority and glory has been given to me and I give them to whoever I wish." Right? And so Jesus rejects that and offers a path for us to also learn how to reject that. But we can't reject something we can't see. And so what I'm doing is I'm pointing out to you in this series how these authorities, these principalities and powers and rulers of the unseen world actually kind of work in the backdrop of our life. They've convinced us to bow, to sacrifice our life in order to become someone, to finally get to be that gold medal winner. I have to sacrifice my life, my diet, my time, my other pursuits, so that I can be the best. See, our push-ups and our best intentions and our diets and our budgets, they're good, but they are masks and costumes as we pursue a new pseudonym, but we are not free. yes, if you don't change the inside and you stick to your diet and your push-ups, you're going to look better, feel better, and all that. But the same you is on the inside. And if that's not the real you, then your life sucks, and you know it. Okay? Am I getting to you? I hope so. So let's talk then. Let's get at this. Lasting change, which is healing. This is true transformation. It begins at the deepest epicenter of our existence. This is why I always talk about ontology, right? That's that our true self, our being, our essence, our who we are. And if we pursue surface level things and forsake knowing who we truly are, then it all goes off the rails. And I then introduced to you a couple weeks ago this dark, quiet closet where a real prayer could be had. This is where we come face to face with reality and discover our true name as the beloved of God. Now, this is not an invitation to religion. You know that. This is the 478th podcast where I have not invited you into a religion, but I have pointed you back to God. And you know you probably need that. And you're a little scared, perhaps, or weirded out, or unsure. But this is why it's a dark closet. No one else is there. It's just you and your maker. You come to terms with that, and something wellows up inside you as the beloved of God. You discover this. You experience this love. It's not a book. It's not a dogma. It's not a doctrine. It's an experience of knowing deep down that you are loved by God, created by God, have a purpose, gift by God. And that experience of love is how we learn to dwell in it, right? We dwell in what has always been loving us into our existence. This is a really key centerpiece for this whole thing. This is where the healing takes place. This is how you change the inside, right? You don't get religion and follow a formula. Your heart is overcome by the love of God. And we're healed by knowing our true identity as the image bearer, as the child of God in the larger family of God. That identity, that new discovery of who you truly are, your teleos, authentic self, right? That helps you overwrite the malware scripts that are being imposed on you at every turn in life. And like concentric circles, when you throw a rock into a pond, the circles start in the middle and they push out. This is the same thing. When we get to that middle, that center part, that ontological center, this path I'm offering you changes from there and flows outward. And we eventually get to the push-ups. We get to the diet and the budget. Those are important. We don't start with them, but we get to them. But we have a few stops on the way before we get there, okay? And today, the next concentric circle, first we had the closet where we meet our maker. Then we had our family. Right now, today, the next axe to be laid to root, like John the Baptist said in Matthew 3, these are our friends and our vocation. And the axe laying to root is subversion. You're going to take it out underneath. You're going to unearth its dominance in your life. So our family of origin forms our frameworks. This gives us an identity and a cosmology. They initiate us into who we are in relation to how everything else works, right? So our family kind of teaches us who we are and how the world works. But the problem is that it's not entirely true and that the frameworks they give us are too small for us to have a successful and fulfilling life. If you take your family dynamic and try and run it for your life, it is too small and it fails and your life struggles. And Jesus said in Mark 2:22 that new wine requires new wine skins. What he's saying is, I'm going to give you something that you're going to have to put into a new container. You're going to need a new framework. So it's kind of like that tiny pot, that plant that you get at Home Depot that's in its formative container, but it's not going to live there very long. The roots are pressed up against the small pot, and it has to be repotted into a bigger framework. That's what this whole work is done. I give it away for free because I want to help you have the largest, most healthy framework possible. And you can repot your life as you see fit. I'm not going to give you a thing or a way to do that. You do that. But this is going to help you do it. I'm going to give you the tools to figure it out. These bigger frameworks are necessary or else life derails and becomes very frustrating. Do you ever feel like everything fights you? Everything fights you. And so you're on edge and you're frustrated. And it's like, that is a need to be repotted. I can help you. The evidence here is that in such a place, when you feel like everything's fighting you, when your life is frustrated, it's because, and I know this doesn't seem right, but it's true, it's because we don't know who we are. We don't actually know what we truly want. You can't know what you want if you don't know who you are. If it's, that's our experience of life that becomes struggle and suffering and pain. Don't you see these connections? That inside needs to be repotted. It's root bound from the frameworks you were given from your family and your center of origin. It's not big enough for the world you live in. Everything's bumping up against the wall. You need a new perspective. You need a new wineskin. This is what Jesus was always inviting us into. Now I'm inviting you into it. Think back to grade school. That's where we kind of first discovered that our worldview is different from that of others. Wow, Tommy, his family is different than my family. They do things different than I do. It's through our peer group that we begin defining who we think we are, kind of gravitating towards cliques that are most similar to us. But it's not uncommon for kids through junior high and high school to try on several different cliques. Oh, I'm the drama team. I'm the band geek. I'm a jock. I'm a rocker. I'm a whatever. I'm a cheerleader squad person. I'm the popular one. I'm the, you name it. I'm goth. The authority of our family in these times of school and education is exchanged for the authority of our peer group. Like, I want you to see these as institutional powers. This goes deeper than just social convention. These exousion, these institutional authorities actually give us a new identity. This is why parents feel like they're losing their teenager, because the teen no longer subscribes to the family's ethos. They subscribe to this other group of teens they've been hanging out with, and it's very disjointing for the family. They're trying on these new identities as a means of discovering who they are, and it doesn't work, but you did it and I did it. And of course, the cool kids in school are the ones who don't seem to have to fit into one of those groups. They just get to, what? Be themselves. Now, we graduate school into a vocation. You go out of high school and you go to a trade school, military, or a college. And if ever we bow down and hope to receive the kingdoms of this world and receive Satan's temptation, it's through our vocation. Our vocation externally indexes us more than our race, our gender, or our family. It imposes on us a durable mark on our right hand, on what we do. It's a pseudonym, a fake ID. It's not who you really are, but it's the predominant one the world uses to stamp on you. It's what you do and who you are very, very much conflated in the minds of most people. In the world, the world system values our vocation, then we really cling to the name our vocation gives us with zeal. Ooh, I'm a doctor. I'm a senator. I'm a tech billionaire. I'm a whatever. I'm a this. I'm a that. You notice when I introduce myself, I say, I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach. I don't say I am an author, right? Think about this. I don't want that mark on me. You don't need that mark on you. But if it gives you one you want, you'd kind of lean into it. I do want to be named by this company. I do want to be the vice president of this big Fortune 500 company. See, in reality, a vocation is just the necessary service we provide and perform for other people by way of the institution. And we do this service, this vocation, in exchange for a living. But it isn't who we are. It's simply how we spend our day in service to others. Vocations are valued in the market according to skill and knowledge. The more skill and knowledge you have in a particular market, the more valuable you are to that market. But that is not to be conflated or confused with our personal value. Folks, whatever the market says, if it values you highly, it doesn't make you highly valued. If it doesn't value your skills and education and knowledge very much, it doesn't mean you're poorly valued. You can't take your personal value from the market's value of you. If we accept the market's value, we've made a very lethal trade in which we've lost ourselves. I hope you see this. And I know that that's a painful feeling. Like you feel like a flunky. You don't want anybody to ask you what you do for a living. It's a terrible conversation. But then if you'd like answering that question, that's just as terrible for you. Both sides of the coin reflect an over-identification with vocation, okay? Now, friends and vocations, these are institutional authorities. And now we can begin healing now that we can see them. We can become liberated from them. Now, hear me. I'm not suggesting we live without friends and jobs. If you're one of these millennial or younger people who are looking at the workforce and you're saying, I don't want to get into all of that. I'm not going to be trapped and be slaved in some cubicle and work and blah, blah, blah. Stop it. You can't just become a YouTuber or whatever. You need to go and get a job and work in the market and develop skills that the market values so that you can serve people. Every job serves people. You don't go to a job to plunder it so it can give you what you want. You go to a job as a means of serving people. That will free you in your vocation. And you're not going to be your vocation. You're going to serve in your vocation, develop skills and talents that you and excellence so that you can give it away. And as you do, the system values you more and opportunity abounds. If you try and avoid it because you see this as a pernicious shadow that will rob you of your life, which it absolutely can, which is why I'm talking about it, then you will avoid your life and you will live in the shadow nonetheless. You're not free. You can't be free by avoiding it. You can be free only by subverting it. You can't be free from overpowering it. You can only be free by subverting it. And you can only subvert it by knowing who you truly are and not exchanging who you truly are for the fake ID that vocation gives you. Freedom from the world's authorities requires that we are in the world, but not of the world. And that's when we can begin to heal it. So if you think the world has a lot of problems, it does. And guess what? It needs you to go in and learn how to serve, learn how to become excellent and give your life away. But don't take the name. Don't take the mark. Be identified by your maker, and then you can heal. These institutions will stop exploiting its employees and then begin serving its constituents. That's how it's healed. True freedom is forfeited by over-identifying with our institutional powers. including our friends and vocations. Now consider the friends and jobs we've had. And how strongly do you require the approval, the acceptance, the validation, the significance, the desperate need for relevance that everybody has? Like, if you have need for those at all, and you get them from your job, then you've traded a portion of your authentic self for this institutional fake ID. Okay? So let that marinate in your contemplation. Yeah, that's a tough one. Now, we are not defined by where we grew up. We're not our family. You are not who your friends are. We are not our school's mascot. I'm not the Ponderosa Mustangs, right? I'm not my alma mater. We are not our vocations. We are not what we do for a living. And even if we're proud to be a part of these organizations, and though we might have benefited by them, they cannot give us our true name. And thus, they cannot tell us who we are, nor what we truly want. That only comes from our Maker. And nearly all of our struggle and suffering in life stems from confusion or a delusion about who we are and what we want. So I'll offer a brief example of what this looks like. Then I'm going to close by offering the correction. Sound good? So let me talk about Chris, okay? Chris could be a male or female. This is a hypothetical situation, but one in which I'm very familiar. Chris works in a competitive industry and is an awarded sales professional. He or she is married and has two children. And Chris works really hard to remain at the top of the stack rank. I mean, Chris is the top of her company. In her sales division, he or she wins all the awards. And part of that is by necessity, and part of it is to prove that he or she is a key player. Like, Chris knows in this environment that if you don't produce, you get thrown out. But Chris also wants to prove to everybody else that they are at the top of the food chain. And over Chris's career, he or she has come to see him or herself as one of the best. Like, that confidence becomes very embedded. Like, I know I can do this. Like, they've been awarded with new titles. They've become manager. They've become director. They've become a vice president. They've climbed the ranks. And Chris, like, telling others that he or she is a VP. Like, Chris really, really enjoys it when people ask, what do you do? The income is great. The status feels good. And Chris loves his or her family, but their marriage is kind of a struggle. It's what I would call a good marriage, which is killing the fact that they don't have a great marriage. Chris's kids are kind of growing apart as their peer group takes over. So Chris is in this tension of trying to be a good mom or dad, really manage things well, but still perform really well at work, and all the tensions and driving around and everything is adding up. And of course, because Chris wants to help provide the best for his or her family, he or she has overspent and is in a world of debt. Chris's life is a house of cards that requires constant juggling. Chris thinks the only solution is to just keep up the illusion. Just keep going. Maybe I'll get a better job. It'll pay more. Maybe I'll get a bigger commission. Maybe I'll get more of this. Maybe I've just bought that thing. I can't make a change right now. And, you know, sorry, kids, you're going to have to just do what mom and dad do and just put your head down and go to work. I know you need me. I know you need attention. I know you need care. But, you know, maybe you can get that at school or some of the other places I'm sending you off to because I'm not there. Chris is living a false life. And nothing he or she values will outlast this version of him or herself. And deep down, Chris knows it. Okay. Folks, I know 1,000 Chrises. I've met them throughout my career in this industry. So much of that illustration is my own life. I've climbed the corporate ladder only to get to the top and go, there's nothing up here that I want. These Chrises have enviable lives if you judge them from the outside. They live in nice neighborhoods. They drive nice cars. They go on nice vacations. Their kids are well-dressed and things seem to be going quite well for them. But inside, they know, like, if I get these folks at a table, I am 2 minutes from a conversation where I can poke out the hollow, haunting question of, is this all there is? And when they get honest, that teleos, that real, authentic part, like, marriage isn't that fulfilling for these people. The kids that they are raising are ungrateful or show little honor or tremendously frustrating or even annoying. And work is actually preferable to daycare and being home with them. Like, I see this all the time. I don't want to lose my career, my title, my name, my identity for the sake of the kid when I can just send them off. Like, this is a real thing. The work that the Chrises do, as rewarding as it is, it's also a threat, which says, this is all going to be gone if you don't keep serving me. Chris is a captive. Chris is a slave. Chris cannot get out. Vacations don't cut it. You need a vacation from your vacation. Retirement is a looming. If it's even possible at all, it's where the chickens come home to roost. And man, I see these people and life is spinning out into a million false hopes. Try meditation. Try this guru. Try this thing. Try this, that thing. What you need to do is just, you know, focus on yourself. Folks, this is a total crap show. And it's because we don't know who we are. We don't know whose we are. And we don't know what we really want. So in closing, let me just offer this. Freedom begins inside out. Once we discover who we are in God, we take away any institution's power to name us. My family can't name me. My job cannot name me. Nothing I do can name me. It has none of them have any power over me. If our friends and vocations don't define who we are, but God does, then that transcendent and eternal thing displaces the temporary and superficial thing, and the deeper existential question vaporizes. See, a true name means we can discover our true purpose. And now the Chrises of the world will have a searchlight, which can lead them into a safe harbor. And here's the good news. A freed Chris can now re-enter the exact same life, but only it's now reordered itself around an agenda of liberty and humility, not pride and captivity. And that starts a domino effect, which redeems everything inside out. And that's the change I'm leading you to in this series. Folks, true and lasting change begins when we subvert these exousions of our fake IDs. God bless you as you contemplate these things.